Shadow could not decide whether he was looking at a moon the size of a dollar, a foot above his head, or whether he was looking at a moon the size of the Pacific Ocean, many thousands of miles away, nor whether there was any difference between the two ideas. Perhaps it was all a matter of perspective. Perhaps it was all a matter of point of view. He looked at the forking path ahead of him.
Which path should I take? Which one is safe?
Take one, and you cannot take the other. But neither path is safe. Which way would you walk? The way of hard truths or the way of fine lies?
Shadow hesitated.
Truths. I've come too far for more lies.
There will be a price.
I'll pay it. What's the price?
Your name. Your real name. You will have to give it to me.
How?
Like this.
She reached a perfect hand toward his head. He felt her fingers brush his skin. Then he felt them penetrate his skin, his skull, felt them push deep into his head. Something tickled in his skull and all down his spine. She pulled her hand out of his head. A flame, like a candle flame, but burning with a clear magnesium-white luminance, was flickering on the top of her forefinger.
Is that my name?
She closed her hand, and the light was gone.
It was.
She extended her hand and pointed to the right-hand path.
That way. For now.
Nameless, Shadow walked down the right-hand path in the moonlight. When he turned around to thank her, he saw nothing but darkness. It seemed to him that he was deep under the ground, but when he looked up into the darkness above him, he still saw the tiny moon. He turned a corner. If this was the afterlife, he thought, it was a lot like the house on the rock, part diorama, part nightmare. He was looking at himself in prison blues in the warden's office as the warden told him that Laura had died in a car crash. He saw the expression on his own face. He looked like a man who had been abandoned by the world. It hurt him to see it, the nakedness and the fear. He hurried on, pushed through the warden's gray office, and found himself looking at the VCR repair store on the outskirts of Eagle Point. 3 years ago. Yes. Inside the store, he knew he was beating the living crap out of Larry Powers and BJ West, bruising his knuckles in the process. Pretty soon he would walk out of there carrying a brown supermarket bag filled with $20 bills. The money they could never prove he had taken. His share of the proceeds and a little more, for they shouldn't have tried to rip him and Laura off like that. He was the only driver, but he had done his part, done everything that she had asked of him. At the trial, nobody mentioned the bank robbery, although he was certain everybody wanted to. They couldn't prove a thing as long as nobody was talking, and nobody was. The prosecutor was forced instead to stick to the bodily damage that Shadow had inflicted on Powers and West. He showed photographs of the two men on their arrival in the local hospital. Shadow barely defended himself in court. It was easier that way. Neither Powers nor West seemed able to remember what the fight had been about, but they each admitted that Shadow had been their assailant. Nobody talked about the money. Nobody even mentioned Laura, and that was all that Shadow had wanted. Shadow wondered whether the path of comforting lies would have been a better one to walk. He walked away from that place and followed the rock path down into what looked like a hospital room, a public hospital in Chicago, and he felt the bile rise in his throat. He stopped. He did not want to look. He did not want to keep walking. In the hospital bed, his mother was dying again, as she died when he was 16. And yes, here he was, a large, clumsy 16-year-old with acne pocking his cream and coffee skin, sitting at her bedside, unable to look at her, reading a thick paperback book. Shadow wondered what the book was, and he walked around the hospital bed to inspect it more closely. He stood between the bed and the chair, looking from the one to the other. The big boy hunched into his chair, his nose buried in gravity's rainbow, trying to escape from his mother's death into London during the Blitz. The fictional madness of the book, No Escape and No Excuse. His mother's eyes were closed in a morphine piece, which he had thought was just another sickle cell crisis, another bout of pain to be endured. Had turned out, they had discovered too late, to be lymphoma. There was a lemonish-gray tinge to her skin. She was in her early 30s, but she looked much older. Shadow wanted to shake himself, the awkward boy that he once was, get him to hold her hand, talk to her, do something before she slipped away, as he knew that she would. But he could not touch himself, and he continued to read. And so his mother died while he sat in the chair next to her, reading a fat book. After that, he had more or less stopped reading. You could not trust fiction. What good were books if they couldn't protect you from something like that? Shadow walked away from the hospital room down the winding corridor, deep into the bowels of the earth. He sees his mother first, and he cannot believe how young she is. Not yet 25, he guesses. Before her medical discharge, and they're in their apartment, another embassy rental somewhere in Northern Europe. He looks around for something to give him a clue, and he's just a shrimp of a kid now, big pale gray eyes and straight dark hair. They are arguing. Shadow knows without hearing the words what they're arguing about. It was the only thing they quarreled about, after all.
Tell me about my father.
He's dead. Don't ask about him.
But who was he?
Forget him. Dead and gone, and you ain't missed nothing.
I want to see a picture of him.
I ain't got a picture.
She'd say, and her voice would get quiet and fierce, and he knew that if he kept asking her questions, she would shout or even hit him, and he knew that he could not stop asking questions, so he turned away and walked on down the tunnel. The path he followed twisted and wound and curled back on itself, and it put him in mind of snakeskins and intestines and of deep, deep tree roots. There was a pool to his left. He heard the drip, drip of water into it somewhere at the back of the tunnel, the falling water barely ruffling the mirrored surface of the pool. He dropped to his knees and drank, using his hand to bring the water to his lips. Then he walked on until he was standing in the floating disco glitter patterns of a mirror ball. It was like being in the exact center of the universe, with all the stars and planets circling him, and he could not hear anything, not the music, nor the shouted conversations over the music. And now Shadow was staring at a woman who looked just like his mother never looked in all the years he knew her. She's little more than a child, after all. And she is dancing. Shadow found that he was completely unsurprised when he recognized the man who dances with her. He had not changed that much in 33 years. She is drunk, Shadow could see that at a glance. She's not very drunk, but she is unused to drink, and in a week or so she will take a ship to Norway. They've been drinking margaritas, and she has salt on her lips and salt clinging to the back of her hand. Wednesday is not wearing a suit and tie, but the pin in the shape of a silver tree he wears over the pocket of his shirt glitters and glints when the mirror ball light catches it. He does not dance badly. They make a fine-looking couple, considering the difference in their ages. There is a lupine grace to his movements. A slow dance. He pulls her close to him, and his paw-like hand curves around the seat of her skirt possessively, moving her closer to him. His other hand takes her chin, pushes it upward into his face, and the two of them kiss, there on the floor, as the glitter ball lights circle them into the center of the universe. Soon after, they leave. She sways against him, and he leads her from the dance hall. Shadow buries his head in his hands and does not follow them, unable or unwilling to witness his own conception. The mirror lights were gone. And now the only illumination came from the tiny moon that burned high above his head. He walked on. At a bend in the path, he stopped for a moment to catch his breath. He felt a hand run gently up his back, and gentle fingers ruffle the hair on the back of his head.
"Hello, hon,"
whispered a smoky female voice over his shoulder.
"Hello,"
he said, turning to face her. She had brown hair and brown skin, and her eyes were the deep golden amber of good honey. Her pupils were vertical slits.
"Do I know you?"
"Intimately. I used to sleep on your bed, and my people have been keeping their eyes on you for me."
She turned to the path ahead of him, pointed to the three ways he could go.
"Okay,"
she said.
"One way will make you wise, one way will make you whole, and one way will kill you."
"I'm already dead, I think. I died on the tree."
She made a moo.
"There's dead, and there's dead, And there's dead. It's a relative thing.
Then she smiled again.
I could make a joke about that, you know. Something about dead relatives.
No, it's okay.